time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy. It's going to be a great day. Just going to be a great day. Might rain, might not. Might rain, might not. It's our AccuGuess forecast. It will be hot, but it'll be a spectacular day to get to the garden center. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. So we don't know what it's going to do today. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. We'll guess. Because you just never know.
You don't.
No, it's the forecast is for hot, humid, chance of scattered thunderstorms throughout the afternoon. And much the same tomorrow, but it won't warm up as much. Today's high is expected to be around 82, and tomorrow's high 77. But sunshine returns on Monday and Tuesday. Isn't that nice of Mother Nature?
It sure is. You know? And speaking of, it was warm this past week, and yes, I finally was able to get up on top of the greenhouse and spray a little shade.
Oh, a little shade?
A little shade.
How do you spray a little shade?
It's a white substance that you'll mix up with water. You dilute it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but you know, it's one of those things you don't read a label except for how you need to mix it. No, just kidding. But finally got up and sprayed the glass, and it made a huge, huge difference in the temperature inside. You know, it's amazing just how things, you know, fluctuate around here, temperature-wise, weather-wise. It's always consistently seems like it's changing. And those of us who have greenhouses, we're trying to make them as comfortable as possible. And when you see people kind of like fanning themselves and sweating up the big one, it's like, oh. And, they're, you know, and inevitably every year, it's hot in here.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's a greenhouse.
It's a greenhouse.
But look at all the happy plants.
Yes. Well, they don't get all, they're not always happy when it really heats up.
Mm-hmm. So, did you have a good Mother's Day?
We did. It was over the top, and thanks to everybody that got out and stopped by the garden center this past Mother's Day. It was great. Mm-hmm. We thank you tremendously, and from everybody in the tri-state area. I know they're very thankful that everybody had gotten out and supported their local garden centers and nurseries. Everyone that I have talked to, Ernie, have reported favorably with sales and said traffic was up, and it was really good.
Nice. Now, so, Mother's Day being the, I guess, the official day where it's safe to put plants in the ground outside and not worry about it, did you see a lot of those type of plants going out the door?
We did.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. So you can just tell, you know, that really is the point where, you know, for the most part, it's safe to go ahead and start putting things in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you never know. You know, there have been times when we've had some really cool and damp and dismal Mays, and but most of the time they're rather nice, and that's when we go for it.
Yeah.
Starting to see a lot of people think about tomato plants, peppers. Those are things you have to be a little cautious about as you start to plant things, you know, for the spring season. And but yeah, you're right. You just hit the nail on the head. People are just, now it's happening. It's, you know, time.
It was an interesting weekend. On the day before Mother's Day, you heard the constant hum of lawnmowers and the whirl of weed eaters and leaf blowers and working feverishly around the yards.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday was all nice and quiet, and everyone kind of gathered around paying tribute to Mom, except for me. On Sunday, I was out, because I was busy all day on Monday, Sunday morning. I was getting all of my stuff done. And then we spent the rest of the afternoon, like everybody else, sort of working out in the yard and just enjoying the day. It was wonderful.
It was beautiful.
Wasn't it great to have that little stretch of about 3 or 4 day week?
Yes. And, you know, really, all of us who have garden centers, we were praying for that type of a situation, that type of weather. And weather affects us so in such a way that, believe it or not, and the best way I can describe it is our business and our industry is like the golf course business in a lot of ways. And when I say that, let's just take, for example, Ernie, if you owned a golf course and you have outings scheduled for every weekend throughout the summer months, spring and summer, and you get one of those weekends where it's a total washout. Well, let's just say company ABC that was set up to have that golf outing couldn't do it because of the weather. You're booked next week, the following week, and the following week. So you can't work them in any way, shape, or form. So you lose that business.
Yeah.
It's hard to get it back.
There isn't a plan B when you're in that industry.
No, not at all. And so we really, we rely a lot on the weather. It's amazing how much the weather affects our business. And that's just part of it. Every year we're on pins and needles. And thus far, you know, actually it started out really good. Then it got a little cold. It was a little damp. And, you know, as I was explaining, we just finally put shade up just the other day on the greenhouse glass. I had to be cautious with that a couple of weeks prior because it was overcast and cool and damp. So therefore, you don't want shade up on the house. Anytime you can get sunshine, you want it. So we're just very thankful. You know, things are panning out, and a lot of us had caught up and made up a lot of ground.
Sure.
And we still have a lot of time ahead of us. So it's not over just because Mother's Day was last week. We have a big, long, huge planting season ahead of all of us.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about what's in your dirt.
What's in my dirt?
What's in your dirt? Because it's that time, and we're all getting our hands dirty, and we're digging.
And we're going to dig in when we come back.
You got it.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get some stuff done around the house and get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center or florist. And last week, a lot of people were probably at Mother's Day celebrations and with new plants and wanting to get them in the ground. And we're going to talk a little bit about what might be in the dirt you were in.
That's right. I was thinking about this the other day, and you always hear the credit card commercial, like, what's in your wallet?
Yeah.
I thought,
yeah.
You know what? That's a great question. What's in your dirt? You know? And that's really important. Or what's in your soil? However you want to term it as being. Do you want to buy some dirt? You know?
Yeah.
But it's so important when we talk about soils. And when we go to the garden centers, when we go to wherever to pick up soils, there are so many to choose from. So my objective this morning is to try and narrow some of those things down for you and try and get you honed in on some things that I know that work really, really well and just try and simplify it for you. And then from that point, you can become or get a little more adventurous and try some other things if you choose to do so. But for example, Ernie, when we talk about our window boxes and when we talk about some of our containers, you know, be it that those containers are perhaps concrete containers, plastic containers, you know, some of the cast iron containers. What we need to take into consideration is our soil base and drainage. It's so, so important. And I want to put a lot of emphasis on this because when we spend a couple hundred dollars at the garden centers and nurseries on nice plants, the foundation is really underneath. It's where all the root growth and everything's starting to happen.
Right.
So therefore, you know, when you put a $100 plant into a $1.99 pot of soil,
right,
that's not good because that's the type of performance that you're going to get from that soil. So I've talked about this many, many times in the past, and the beauty of this is I love it when customers come in and they'll say, hey, I want this, I want this, and I want this. And Tony, was this the combination? Yes. And they're believers in this now, and they work with this, and it's so effective, and it keeps things in check. For your containers and window boxes, I always talk about using Fertilume's Ultimate Potting Mix, and you'll find that at your local garden centers in a red bag. And I, you know, there was a poster that went around a couple of years ago. It said, "Why wait for a miracle if you get it?" And I can't agree with that anymore. And so look for the Fertilume potting soil at your local garden centers and nurseries. It comes in a 25 quart bag, a 50 quart bag, or a 3 cubic foot bag. And there's sizes for all. And sometimes there are customers who say, hey, I can't quite lift that large bag. I'll just get a couple smaller bags. Whatever works for you, that's great, but you have those options. I like to mix the Fertilum soil with Michigan Pete's Garden Magic Topsoil.
Michigan Pete?
That's the name of the company. It's Michigan Pete that puts out Garden Magic Topsoil. Now, the Garden Magic Topsoil is going to cost you a couple more dollars than some of that really cheap and expensive stuff that you see out there at the box stores. But it's well worth it. What's a couple of dollars?
Yeah.
You know, really. I mean, but it means a lot for those plants that you spent hundreds of dollars on. But what I like about this, these two in particular, when you mix them 50-50, the texture really comes together. You'll see it. And when you look at them side by side, the Fertilum Ultimate Potting Mix and the Garden Magic Topsoil, when you look at them side by side and just feel the texture with your hands, you'll get it. You'll understand what I'm trying to say. The topsoils, you know, and even some of the inexpensive potting soils, they stay sometimes a little too wet. When you're working with these soilless mixes, like the one I'm talking about with Fertilum, there's peat moss in there, there's perlite, not a lot of bark in the Fertilum mixes, which is what I like.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can plant in the Fertilum straight up, but if it ever gets a little dry, it shrinks away from the side of the pot or whatever it is that you planted up. So when you mix these two together, the balance is there. They keep one another in check. They really, really do. Mm-hmm. And you will have a great soil base for your window boxes and your containers. So once you get everything in place, and you also, what else is very, very important, is making sure that you have something in the bottom of those containers that allows for really, really good drainage.
Right.
Nothing wants to sit in water.
Mm-hmm.
So with that set up, you're only going to be successful. Trust me, you're going to be really, really successful. So once you get everything planted, all you need to do is either use, you know, the high yield, the garden coat or Osmocote as your fertilizer, and just put it on top. Scratch it in with your fingertips, and you're going to have beautiful plants for the rest of the season.
Nice.
That is the basis for your containers. Now, if you want to go ahead and just buy some other types of soil products out there that provide a lot of really good soil amendments that's all in one package, I like the Fox Farm products. We sell a lot of Happy Frog at Jackson Florist and Garden Center. We sell a lot of the Ocean Forest. And those two are great for containers as well. The Ocean Forest is geared with using larger pots, and you're looking for the better drainage element because it has a little bit of bark in it. The other, Happy Frog, a great mixture. It too has perlite. It has earthworm castings in it. It's a great product. So there's that element of fertilization in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It too works really well in containers and window boxes. So, you know, it just be careful with what you're purchasing. Don't use those inexpensive soils. And that's the benefit of going to a local garden center or nursery. We carry good soils. We really do. We also carry some of that less expensive stuff because if you're on that budget or, you know, you don't care what it is or what it's all about and you just want to buy on price, it's there too.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to get the best information at the local garden centers and nurseries and the best soil products. And you'll have great containers throughout the season. If you just follow that rule.
Pretty simple.
It's really, really simple.
And everybody at the locally owned, independently operated garden centers will be able to provide that information for you.
It's right. It's what's in your dirt. So we just talked about what's in your containers, what's in your window boxes and so forth. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's in the landscape bed, what's in the garden, what's in your soil.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a little bit of rain in the forecast for today as I look outside. And Tony enjoyed driving in the fog. You like fog?
I do. Just looking out the window here, it's foggy. I just think it's a neat, I don't know. To me, it's just real tranquil, quiet, eerie.
Like a beautiful snowfall.
Better than a beautiful snowfall, in my opinion.
Yeah?
Yeah, sometimes I wish that I lived up in the upper northwest where it's real foggy, or if you're in the northeast and you just catch that fog as it rolls in. I just think it has a mystique about it.
It does. It's one of those things where for me, you expect to see Sherlock Holmes walking through, smoking a pipe with that duster on and the ugly hat, and smoking a pipe. So we were talking earlier about dirt and what's in your dirt.
Soil.
Yep. And if you don't start with a good foundation, you've got no hope of success.
Well, not that you don't have any hope of success, but it's pretty much like that. I mean, it's you're playing Russian roulette. You really are. And I say it all the time. It's just, it's all about the foundation. You know, take a marathon runner, Ernie. If you just wear, they don't just wear any type of running shoe. You know, it's, you know, so that's part of the foundation of running, you know, the equipment, you know, what you're using and how you train and what you're doing. Same with plants. You know, a lot of people too, this is so important. And this is why I want to talk a little bit about this morning. I'm finding more people who are gardening with raised beds.
Yes.
And this is where all this comes into play. And this is why I was thinking the other day, instead of what's in your wallet, what's in your soil. And when you work with raised beds, people who are in urban environments, you know, you just don't have that big plot of 2 acres or 3 acres or a half an acre. You know, there's limited spaces. So therefore, it's raised boxes, or it may be containers as well. So it could be both, one or both, like I said. But, you know, the raised beds, you know, building that raised bed with a number of different types of soil amendments, just start with a topsoil. And Natural Guard makes another really good soil amendment for gardens, and it's ARMRI certified. It's peat based. It's a great garden soil. I'm getting really low on it at the garden center. We've been selling a lot of it. It works so well in raised beds. And what I've done in the past, I've taken that along with, for example, we have a Happy Frog soil conditioner, which contains, it's a lot of it's aged forest products, and there's earthworm castings in it as well, back guano, there's beneficial microbes. So I'm taking a combination of all these things and bringing them together into that raised bed. Composted cow manure or composted products, you know, those are great to add into your raised beds. Soil conditioner, sometimes you'll find soil conditioners at your local garden centers and nurseries. And soil conditioner, what it is, and it's a great product to plant with, too, it's finely ground up pine fines. And that adds a nice element of texture to your soil beds. You know, your raised beds, your raised boxes. So when you do these raised bed gardens, it's you have a fresh start. You have the framework to set up that right soil mixture. And it makes it a lot easier, too, to grow rooted type of vegetables like carrots, you know,
horseradish.
You were talking about that earlier, a number of different things. I don't know if I would grow horseradish in my raised bed. That stuff gets crazy.
Yeah.
And but it's building that foundation. And when you do that, you don't have to do anything from this point forth. It's already there. All you do is just work it a bit. Another soil amendment that I really like a lot to add to raised beds, which I add to mine a lot, is it's called Posey Power, which is sterilized horse manure, little brewer's grain.
I'm a little confused on that process.
Well,
how do you sterilize?
They heat it up, and they heat it up to kill the seed in the manure. Okay. You know, when I hear guys come in and say, oh, my buddy's got racehorses or he's got horses on his farm, I'll just get his horse manure. I tell them straight up, yeah, that's what I would do. Okay? But what happens is it's full of weed seed.
Yeah.
You know? They're fighting it.
Right.
And, you know, I do that. And it's only those guys that stick their chest out and their feathers get all fucked backwards. And it's, hey, I mean, you're trying to sell me something I can get for free? Okay. There's a difference.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You'll be spending a lot of time picking weeds out of that.
You know, I don't know anything. I'm just there. I'm just a fixture. You know, same with cow manure.
Yeah.
You know, you want that stuff that's aged. You want that stuff that's been, you know, processed. It's aged. It's gone through the period of, you know, just deteriorating. It's not hot. It works really well. It's a great soil amendment. So, yeah, it's those things are really, really important.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Hey, we're going to get away from the soil, so we're going to talk about a little plant issue, maybe what's bugging you in the garden, and it has to do with the beautiful hosta.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And got a couple of that. We just got a call from Rick, I think, and he had a question about arborvitus. And I can't recall what the worry was right at the moment.
I believe it was planting arborvitus, and Rick has a lot of clay soil.
That's it.
And that's a great question. You know, we do have a lot of clay in this area. And clay is really, in a lot of ways, it's our friend. In a lot of ways, it's not. But think of it like this, and I say this all the time, and if I'm repeating it too much, I apologize. But if we lived in Florida and we had all sand, you would wish like heck you had a little bit of clay.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So clay is not always bad. When we have a little too much of it, it can be an issue, that's for sure. But clay also, it holds plants in place because of its structure. It also has an ability to hold nutrients a little longer than sand. It also can hold moisture a little longer than sand. But we got to have the right amount. And we just, all we need to do, and this is a good rule just to follow in general when you're planting trees, when you're planting shrubs,
right,
is to always dig the hole twice the width of the root ball.
Gotcha.
Or the size of the pot that you're purchasing at the local garden center and nursery. And secondly, this is so important too, the soil that you dig out of that hole, do not discard it. Do not throw it away and just fill in with loose soil. I want you to set that soil that you dig out of that hole off to the side and just visually inspect it, look at it, and say, hey, by volume, I'm going to add some other soil amendments to that soil. And when I say by volume, I'm saying I always like to mix 25 to 30% of peat moss or a combination, some peat moss and compost, maybe some pine fines, whatever it is that you have as a soil amendment, mix it evenly with that clay and then fill back in around your plant after you plant. It's just a good rule to follow. It works really well, and you won't be disappointed. And you know, you have to look at it like this sometimes too. When you're planting in a certain spot, you need to and you want to use that existing soil with some other soil amendments, because ultimately that plant, as it grows and develops, that root structure is going to get out into that soil that's already there. So it's going to grow in that soil. So we need to use it. It needs to be acclimated with it. It needs to, you know, be able to identify that. And you're going to have, it's going to make for a healthier and happier plant.
Sure.
I also like to encourage people when you plant like that is to use some sort of a root stimulator. Something that promotes root development. Stay away from the green box. You know, that's not where I want you to go. I want you to use a root stimulator. I've used a lot of Fertilume's root stimulator in the past. It's a liquid. It's genetically engineered to promote root growth with hormones. You'll never go wrong with that product. It's a root stimulator. Or you can use Start and Grow from Fertilume. You can also use Biotone from Espoma. Those are three great products that you can use to get your plants off to a good start when you plant your plants.
Nice.
You won't go wrong.
Right.
And do not, I repeat, do not gun them with the green box. So real simple there, Rick. Just dig that hole twice the width of the pot, not deep. You know, sometimes plant just a smidge high and then just bring the soil up to the top of that soil surface where it came out of the pot. And never take soil, never take soil up over the tree trunk or the stems of a shrub. You always plant it level. You know, you can raise it up a little bit and then bring the soil up to that point. And when you mulch, never take mulch up over the trunk of a tree or the stems of your shrub.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home garden guys. Don't forget, you can always jump onto our Facebook page and pose questions and post pictures there. And we're also talking a little bit about something that might be bugging our listeners, and that could be what is eating up your hostas.
Have you ever looked at your hostas and you see all these holes in it where it looks like somebody just took a shotgun and just blew the living daylights out of them?
Got one of them now that we're concerned about.
Yeah, and the reason why I want to bring this up, because it's happening. You know, it's the slugs. You know, they're feeding on them late in the evening at night while you're sleeping. They're feeding.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather that we've had with the moisture and so forth, just it's an ideal stage. It's the perfect setup for slug activity.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're out and they're active and they're out partying and all that good stuff, they all meet at the hosta plant and they just work their way up the stems and hang out underneath the leaves at night and giggle and cut up, you know, might have a few libations and they'll chew on your leaves.
Right.
So those are the holes. That's where they're coming from. The problem is, once that happens, you can't repair those holes.
Right.
And then you have it for an ugly-looking hosta bed.
Sure.
So what we can do to protect those, that's what's bugging us, is use some of the slug and bait killers. And you can use the one from High Yield, which is great. It works extremely well. And the easiest way to apply these products, they're granular, okay, Ernie, is to have somebody gently take, you just take a broomstick handle, go underneath the plant and raise up ever so lightly and sprinkle that bait down underneath around the hostas.
Oh, okay.
And it will keep those snails at bay.
Good.
And people say this to me all the time. Well, I don't see them. I don't see them. I see some of the slimy marks, but I don't see them. Well, go out there after dusk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after the sun goes down a little bit, you'll see these guys working their way up to the hosta, ready to go to the big dance. They love it. One other thing I want to point out, as we're talking about what's bugging you and what works keeping the slugs and snails off of your hostas, is if you have pets and they hang out in the hosta bed and so forth, there is a slug bait that's safe for pets. So keep that in mind. Bonide makes one that's safe for pets, and it's a bug and slug killer. And if you're not worried about pets and you don't have pets, then I would just go with the High Yield because it's a little bit cheaper. So look for High Yield's slug and snail bait if you don't have pets and you're not worried about it. But if you do, you're going to pay a little bit more money using the Bonide product, but both work effectively.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I do have another question about the hostas before we move on, but when we come back, I'll ask you that question. And what else are we going to talk about?
Well, let's throw it out there, the plan of the week, because I'm excited to talk about it. And it's definitely a beautiful specimen in the landscape. And sometimes, you know, it's been around for a while, but we don't talk about it often. And if you're looking for a tree for a smaller space, this might be the one.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And just before we went into the break, we were talking about the hostas and some of the things that might be bugging you and bugging your hosta plant. And I had a quick question for you, Tony. There's around the patio there at our house, we've decided to move the grill to just off of the patio and put some landscape stones there to for it to sit on, but there's a hosta plant right there, and I want to know if it's okay to move it and what I need to do before I move it.
For the grill, move it. You kind of caught me off guard when you said grill, like that's an important thing to you, because you don't even man a grill.
No, but you won't touch what comes off of that grill.
I know you do.
And so I want my wife to be comfortable while she's out there working the grill.
All right. Here, moving hostas, this is it in a nutshell for me. And honestly, I like to move hostas or divide hostas as they're starting to show their spears early in the season, where they kind of almost resemble that of an asparagus.
Right.
And that's when, you know, they're not fully unfurled or developed yet. And so therefore all that energy is, it's sitting there in that root system and structure. Go ahead and move it. That's when I like to move hostas. Also, I'm not opposed to moving hostas late in the summer going into the fall, because actually things that I've read about hostas, they put on their best root development in the month of August.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was very interesting. So, but in your case, to put the grill there, go ahead, lift the hosta, get as much of that root ball as you can, you know, dig around it as best you can. Is it large or is it kind of a medium size?
No, it's kind of a smaller one.
Okay.
It's not too old. It hasn't been there very long.
So, you know, spade around it, loosen it up, and, you know, have the site that it's going to go to, the new location, prepped and ready.
Okay.
Just lift it, get as much of that root structure as you can, and go ahead and move it. And just, you know, keep it adequately watered. You know, it might go under a little bit of stress.
Yep.
But no, go ahead. I would make, you know, I mean, hostas, come on. They're pretty tough. You can right. buy another one if something really failed or went awry with your hosta.
Sure.
But for the grill, the grill rules.
That's exactly right.
The grill rules.
Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, in and around the house, is ready with your plans of the week.
Well, I'm going to take a minute and make sure you jump on to our In and Around the House Facebook page. Tony put a great group of pictures on there about our plant of the week.
And that is, it's a tree. It's mm-hmm. a small deciduous tree. Has a very unique look to it. It brings about a great deal of winter interest, and that's why I like this tree a lot. It also works really well in landscape beds where there may be some potential space constraints. And again, never plant a tree or a shrub too close to the house, and we'll talk more about that as well. But this particular tree, you might see it get around 20, 25 feet, and sometimes a little more, a little less. It just depends. A spread of about 15 to 25 feet. Full sun is the exposure that this particular specimen likes, maybe a little bit of part shade. It will tolerate, as we were talking with Rick a moment ago, some clay soils, but, you know, it's not fussy about it. However, it must have good drainage mm-hmm. if that's the situation. And the plant of the week is a tree called Acer griseum. You familiar with that?
Not at all.
But that is... the paper bark maple.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful specimen. And as you can see, I posted some photographs mm-hmm. of this particular tree.
Checking them out now. Mm-hmm.
And you can see that cinnamon color in a bark, maybe a reddish brown color, however you want to term it as being, as it exfoliates and it peels back and it just lingers and it hangs out on the bark. You know, it just is so, so, so interesting. And this tree is not a rapid or fast-paced grower okay. by any means. So if you were to pick one up at your local garden center and nursery, don't think that this is going to be a shade tree and it's going to be there in a couple of years rather quick. You know, it's not a fast grower, but I am telling you this, it is one well worth looking for and having in the landscape if you have a place for it. It's so cool. And, you know, the fact, you know, this is, you know, the most notable attribute, again, is its exfoliating bark.
Mm-hmm.
That's it in a nutshell. In the fall, colors can vary, and I think a lot of this has to do with the amount of sun that it gets, you know, obviously the amount of moisture and so forth over the course of a growing season. So, therefore, you know, you'll see some shades of colors that will vary periodically, maybe from year to year. Sometimes I've seen this where it has more oranges in it, maybe some reds. And I've also seen it where it was kind of a greenish color to a bronze kind of color with the nice. Foliage. So a lot of that has to do with, you know, the type of season that we have throughout the growing season. Also, it does get the samaras. You know, those are little seed helicopter kind of things. So,
whirligigs.
Whirligigs. And, you know, again, it's smaller in stature and, it has a place in the landscape. And it's one, it's the type of tree you don't see too often.
Sure.
But it's gorgeous to say the least. Look for it, ask for it. Just go to one of your local garden centers and nurseries and say, hey, I heard Tony talking about the paper bark maple. Do you have one? I want to see it.
749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, I've got to ask you about your youngest gardener at Jackson Florist. We'll talk about that when we come back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we want to remind you again, take the time to go over to our Facebook page, look us up and like us. We're going to like you right back. We always post a lot of great pictures, and it's an awesome way to stay in touch with us. And then once in a while, you'll run across one of the coolest little pictures. Tony, tell me about your youngest gardener or youngest shopper there in the picture you posted.
It was a Kodak moment.
It was.
It really was. It wasn't staged, and except I had her come back down the aisle again because I had to get a photograph of her pushing her cart. A little girl was in the garden center the other day, the most adorable little girl. And the whole thing is this, is that she was pushing her own little stroller with her baby doll.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a bag of the ultimate potting mix soil in her cart. It looks like it's like a little small kid's grocery cart.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a shopping cart. And underneath, she had her little cell pack of some tomato plants. And it was so adorable. I said, "Hun, can you come back down that aisle one more time so I can take a picture of you?" And it caught me off guard. We're busy. It's hustling. It's bustling. And I just thought it was a Kodak moment.
Nice.
And it just a little future gardener. And she was with, I believe it was her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so cool. And I love those kind of things. I love those kind of stories. You know, kids remember going to the garden centers or various places with their grandparents or their parents. And you always want to go back and revisit that moment. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? I hear it all the time where people will say, I remember coming here with my grandparents. You know, when my mom and dad were at work, my grandparents would bring me in here as a youngster.
Sure.
And that's what it's all about with local businesses.
Yeah. And you were always talking about getting them started early, and someone has certainly done that.
And you know? Has done it well. And it's just so, it was so cute. Mm-hmm. I can't say anything else more or better about it.
Yeah, that's an awesome picture there. So make sure you take the time to jump onto our Facebook page, and we'll be happy to post some more pictures for you in just a little bit.
So you were talking before we got into the show this morning, some of your buddies down there at Bowlin's.
Yeah.
They were talking about horseradish, is that right?
Yeah, my ugly buddy Russ and JJ and a couple of other guys were talking about, Russ, of course, has gotten his garden out, but the torrential downfall, of course, maybe wiped out a couple of things he was working on, but they were discussing horseradish. And is there any way to get a second crop, I guess?
I thought that was one of the most interesting questions I've ever heard, and I can't honestly answer that. And I jokingly, I would say this, harvest part of it early and then harvest the other part later, so you'll have two crops. I don't know. I know that plant can get quite large.
Yeah.
And it's a rugged old plant, to say the least, from what I understand. I've never grown it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know that when you're choosing or selecting a site for it, full sun, and it just sighted. I've always heard people say put it in a place that's out of the way because it just takes over. It's huge.
And you had mentioned that some people will take the old galvanized tubs that all of our parents and grandparents used to have, and especially if the bottom has started to rust away, to cut that out and then plant the horseradish inside that.
Yeah, right.
So that it controls it a little bit.
Yes. Now, I've heard people doing that.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? I love horseradish, too. If I'm ever downtown at Findlay, go over to Gibbs. They have horseradish, fresh grated horseradish. Mm-hmm. I don't like the creamy horseradish. I like the good stuff. You know, when you put that on a piece of meat, you know, you taste it. All of a sudden, that sinus cavity opens up. and you got to go. You're like, whoa. You know, it's like it just opens up the cavities. That's mm-hmm. all I'm going to tell you. But you can buy it where it's hot. And you can buy it where it's a little toned down. But I've never grown it. I would be interested to hear somebody who can tell us a little bit more about horseradish. But I would tell your ugly buddy, Russ, That's how, if he wants a second harvest, that's how.
Harvest the first part and then wait a while, harvest it again. There's two harvests.
I don't know. Usually, I think they do it after the frost. You harvest it, if I'm not mistaken, after the frost starts to knock back the foliage.
Okay.
So.
There you have it, Russ.
Ugly buddy, Russ.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. You're a local home and garden guys. And we were talking about our plant of the week, mm-hmm. and you said you had some more information about other trees that have that.
I'm going to add bark. A little bit to the wonderful paper bark maple because of its interesting exfoliating bark. There are some other trees, too, that provide the same thing that might be of even more interest to you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking a little bit about the plant of the week in the tree. I love that you said it had a cinnamon color texture to it.
Mm-hmm, the bark.
The bark.
The shrub.
Mm-hmm. And when we come back after our phone call, we're going to talk a little bit more about some other trees that have sure. some specialties. But we have Rob on the line from Lakeside Park. Got a question for you about his amaryllis. Morning, Rob.
Good morning.
So,
hey, I just had a question. I've got a potted amaryllis, and I don't know exactly what kind it is, but everybody keeps asking me about it because the thing has just grown unbelievably over the last probably 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, it's got about 7 stalks with probably 30 blooms on it.
Oh, wow. Is it in bloom now?
I'm sorry?
Is it in bloom now?
It is completely in bloom now.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And everybody asked me about it, and I have no clue. I think we got it as a gift one time and put right. it in a pot and didn't know anything about it. And like I said, everybody keeps asking me as it makes me look good, and I have no clue about it.
So it's gotten quite larger over the years, right?
Yeah, so I've probably put it in 2 or 3 different pots.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the wintertime when it gets cold, I basically put it in the garage,
right?
Put it under a shelf, let it go dormant, and then bring it back out in the spring, and it just goes crazy.
What do you do with it in the spring? Like after? Well, I'm just curious. After it goes through its bloom cycle, so you put it in the garage at that point in time? Is that what you do?
No, I leave it out.
You leave it outside. Okay.
Yeah, then in the when it starts to get colder, I put it into the the garage, basically under a shelf, out of sight, and let it go dormant.
Perfect.
And then, so I didn't know if you guys had any idea about what kind it was. Everybody
is
asking me.
Is it red?
It is red.
It could more than likely the most popular red is one called Red Lion.
Okay.
I know there's a couple others that are red, but Red Lion's the most popular. And I would say more than likely that's the variety that it is. And don't hold me to that. I'm probably 80% sure.
Okay.
It's a great performer. It's been around for a long time. And you can always, it's very reliable. You know,
gotcha.
Once you got it in such a cycle that I'd love to see that. Or just, send us a photograph.
Yeah, I will do that. I just took a picture last week, basically, when it was in full bloom. And it's one of those flowers that I've done literally nothing to, but it, like
right.
I said, it makes me look good as if I know what I'm doing. So
now, you know what? It's sometimes, everything that you're telling me, you're like Johnny on, and I what size pot is it in?
It's a pretty large pot. In fact, to bring it in and out of the garage, I use a dolly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
To get it mm-hmm. in and out. But like I said, I've had it, I think we were given it as a housewarming gift one time, and and that's been at least 3.5, almost 4 years now. So we've, just kept bringing it out every spring. It does its thing, and
right.
Like I said, I've gotten a lot of compliments, but know nothing about it. So that's why I was giving you guys a call.
Hmm. When you take it outside, what type of sun exposure do you place it in?
It gets pretty full sun. It's probably getting, I would say it gets morning to late afternoon and then early evening.
Wow, that's sun. More than I would anticipate it would tolerate, to be honest. But you're getting it acclimated too, so that's a good thing. Because I was thinking more morning up to about 1:30-ish maybe, then some afternoon kind of dappled light or indirect light.
It gets quite a bit.
Yeah. I like how you winter it over. That's a great way to do it. You know, there are various ways to take care of your amaryllis after it blooms. And, you know, the one thing is always cut the stalk out, okay. Which I'm sure that you do. Because you're also helping it save more energy without supporting those stalks once it's finished okay. blooming. And usually, other than what you're doing, you know, most people will, you know, they want to store the bulb in some fashion. And typically, you could cut everything back, clean the bulb, and just store it in a cool place for a minimum of like 6 or 8 weeks. But that okay. you take a picture of that. I'd love yeah. to see it. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I will send the picture over.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thanks. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. So let's go back to the trees, Tony, and tell me about a couple of other options.
Well, there's, you know, in addition to the paper bark maple, one of my other favorite trees that has a beautiful looking bark element to it, and it's so graceful. It's got this upright spreading habit. It could also serve as a great shade tree, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. is the lace bark elm called Alley. Beautiful specimen. Just incredible. Mm-hmm. That is one that you might want to look for. And, you know, all of us are so familiar, all well too familiar with the river birch.
Right.
You know, that too will give you that exfoliating bark look and texture that's really unique and interesting. And something I want to point out about these trees, if you really want to highlight a tree, although we're looking at it at various times throughout the season and, you know, during the day, I can't tell you how much landscape lighting will accent these attributes of these trees. Mm-hmm. So when you have guests over and it might be late in the evening and your landscape lights are on and they're in front of the tree, up against the bark of the tree, it's beautiful. It just makes a statement. It creates that interest in that tree even more so.
Nice.
You know,
yeah.
It does. It just...
And you have a river birch back in the back part of your lot, don't you?
On the side of the house.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I somewhat wish that it was a little further away. Right now, I'm cleaning up, you know, some of the catkins, you know, the debris from the catkins, you know, the blooms when it's in bloom early mm-hmm. in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes too, you know, it has a knacky way it's a unique way of like just dropping limbs all the time, like pruning itself, you know, especially after it gets windy.
Yeah.
I love the river birch. It tolerates a lot of situations, temperatures and moisture and soil situations. You can't go wrong with it, but it's a tree that it stood the test of time. It does what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I just wish it was a little bit off to the side. Also, you know, the Dawn Redwood is another interesting tree. Love the bark on it. You know, in the Dawn Redwood, it appears to sometimes, you know, some people think that it's an evergreen, but it's not. It's deciduous. Turns a beautiful bronze color in the fall, a brownish bronze color.
Hmm.
And then it just drops, you know, drops its needles. That's another tree that's really, really interesting. If you got an area for it in a landscape, definitely consider the Dawn Redwood. What was some of the others? There's a, the Japanese stewardia gets 20 to 35 feet on average. One called pseudo camellia. Interesting bark on this tree. There's so many interesting trees out there that you can just look for at your local garden centers and nurseries and create some interest in your own landscape. You know, instead of just planting what we're all so familiar with, there's these other trees that definitely deserve a lot of merit and have a lot of noteworthy characteristics.
So get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center.
Absolutely.
And check out all the selection you have and get them in the ground.
Get them in the ground. Yeah. It's never too late to plant a tree. You can plant all season long. I'm often asked, you know, hey, is the fall the time to do it? Yeah, fall's a good time to plant a tree. There's no doubt about it. Usually that's when a tree has dropped its foliage, less stress and so forth. It's a little cooler. But, you know, we have a lot of time ahead of us. It's not too hot right now. And, you know, we're primarily, for the most part, selling and planting containerized trees. So therefore, there's really not a lot of risk in planting trees throughout the season. It's the perfect time to do it. Anytime you can plant a tree, it's awesome.
Sure.
You're doing the right thing.
And the prep work is similar to you were talking about transplanting some of the other plants. Dig out twice the size of the ball and dig down far enough, but you not know, too far.
Great topic. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll talk about taking care of the tree or planting a tree as we, you know, I want to talk about getting too close to the house.
Okay. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking a little bit about trees, and something that happens quite often is homeowners will buy a tree and think, oh, this will be beautiful right here. And it does look great right there for a year or so. Then the tree starts to grow, and you realize you put it in the wrong spot.
Happens often, as a matter of fact. You know, and not just with trees. A lot of times with shrubs as well. And when we talk about, you know, what can a shrub or a tree grow to height-wise, or what could it spread potentially become, those are just averages. You know, when you see those on a card, and believe me, every little card or sticker or label or every website you go to, it's always different. It's across the board. But right. In general, it's just an average. And it's just a generalized average. A tree will get a certain height. Let's take, for example, you know, we were talking about the, the paper bark maple.
Yeah.
Okay. And, I mean, I've seen where people say it can get from 20 to 25. I've seen people say from 25 to 30. So probably 20 to 25. Let's just keep it there. Nothing, and this is something else too, nothing stops growing until the day it dies. So just keep that, always keep that in mind. You know, plants don't grow to 20 foot and say, hup,
that's it.
I'm going to be like Ernie. I'm going to sit in the old sofa or on a lazy boy chair and quit growing. Those are just average heights. There are just average widths that we can kind of judge or go off of when we plant a tree in relation to where our homes are or where other plants might be. And those situations, when we talk about these trees and shrubs, they've been growing for a number of years. And they, you know, they've been in ideal growing conditions and situations. That's just an average. So, for example, if a tree is to get on average 20 to 25 feet in width, what you need to consider is where it's going to go. And let's just say you want to get it kind of close to the house. We all want that tree as close to the house. And then all of a sudden, we want that tree that doesn't root deep. We want that tree that doesn't hurt the foundation. We want that tree that doesn't get into our sewer lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the perfect tree. Where is it?
Yes.
The perfect tree is where you plant it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so keep that in mind in the conditions that you have around and in your landscape. So if you have a tree that's on the average going to get 25 feet wide, think about it. From the center of that tree where the trunk is, leave 12 and a half feet in all directions.
Okay.
Sometimes you can cheat a little bit, and then you can prune and keep things within bounds. So those are other options that you have. But just in general, if it says 25 feet wide from that trunk, you can go out 12 and a half feet in all directions. So that means if your driveway's right next to it, it might be difficult to pull the car there at some point
sure,
in time.
Sure.
Or a moving truck or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's going to hit it. It's like street trees. So keep that in mind, and that goes as you know along as well with shrubs. That's so important. The right plant in the right place. Do not try and make things work. I was working with somebody on a landscape design, and they were adamant about some trees that were just totally too big for the spot.
And did you just?
I just throw up
your hands and go, well,
you know, it's somewhat like, I don't know, maybe talking to your child and saying, hey, don't do this until somebody else says, no, you can't do that. Yeah. Then they understand.
The customer is not always right.
Well, and you know, you're trying to say, hey, let's look at these other options. And that's why if I do a landscape design or something or help someone with their landscape, I give you three or four different options. I'm not going to say, hey, you got to put this there, and this there, and that's how it's going to be.
Right.
You know, I want to know what your wants and likes are or what you dislike. And I'll give you three or four options and let you and your spouse choose one of those four options, what's suitable to you guys. Because Your landscape is like a canvas. You know, it's your artwork. It's what you will see every day when you leave work and pull into your driveway and into the garage, seeing the home from the curb. It's your landscape. It's your artwork. So it's up to you.
Sure. Yeah, it's one of the things that you're going to see the first thing in the morning when you leave, and the last thing you see when you come home at night. So you might as well make sure that you're happy with it.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about trees and shrubs as well, a lot of people are coming into the garden center and, you know, they're looking for natives. And there's nothing wrong with natives. I've loved natives. We're going to talk about natives, too, a little bit. But also keep in mind, there are some other species of plants out there that aren't necessarily native to our area that do extremely well in our area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm an advocate fan of some of those that are non-native, too. But I'm also in support of native plants. And just to give you an example, in our area here, let's just talk about a couple of trees that are native. And one that I really like a lot, too, is the Ohio Buckeye. You know, it's a beautiful tree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's native to this area, obviously, hence the name, the Ohio Buckeye.
Right.
But, you know, these are trees that, you know, you don't hear very many people talk about. One in particular that I think that does extremely well and it's more disease resistant is a buckeye tree called Fort McNair. And, you know, but the buckeye, it's native to this area. The service berries, they're native to this area. Red buds, they are native to this area. You can just go on and on. The tulip poplar, what a tree. That tree puts on so much growth. You know, it's a fast-growing tree. It's a great shade tree. The blooms are spectacular. You know, the tulip poplar, I mean, you can't beat that tree. Pin oaks. I still like the pin oaks, you know. Love that look of the pin oak. Although they hold their leaves for a long time going through the fall and winter months, who doesn't like the pin oak? You know, it's another native. The pawpaw tree, which I've still to this day have yet to eat a pawpaw. One of my friends down at my office, my other office at B-Dubs, where you might find me, that's one of my little after work watering holes. She was supposed to bring me some pawpaws in. She said they had a, and it didn't happen. I'm like, hey, where were you? Teasing me with the pawpaw.
That's your extension office.
That's my extension office. Well put, by the way. Thank you. You know, another tree that doesn't get notoriety that's native to our area is the yellowwood. You know, boy, when it goes into bloom, when it's in bloom, the clusters, those fragrant, you know, flowers on it, it's just, it's incredible. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do here when we're planting and when we're talking about natives or non-natives. Just plant something. That's all I want you to do. And if you plant a tree, go out there to takingroot.org and register that tree. So important. You know, that's a great, that too in itself, we've talked about that many, many times in the past, Ernie, the importance of registering trees. It's a great initiative that's taking place here in the tri-state area where we're trying to plant 2 million trees by the year 2020.
And I think we can do it.
You think we can do it? I'd like to know where we are. You know, I don't keep up with all those statistics and all the data. But certainly, if you buy a tree at one of our local garden centers and nurseries to support this show, certainly register that tree or ask them, somebody on staff, where you can do that. Plant a tree. I don't care what kind of tree that it is. It's so important.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
let's drum up and talk about the old tomato. You know,
you say tomato.
Tomatoes. And we're going to devote a show to this, but I, you know, now we're past Mother's Day. That red fruit is one of the best, and who doesn't like the old BLT?
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been covering a lot of ground today, getting you ready. You know, we've talked up to Mother's Day about you gotta wait. And now the gates have been flung open, and it's time to get it done.
They're wide open.
Wide open.
It's been crazy. It's been busy, and that's what we all work for, that those of us who have garden centers and nurseries, it's our time of year. I mean, it's we got to make hay when we can make hay. And I am going to tell you this, I am worn out. I'm worn to the bone.
Yeah.
It's every ounce of energy I can muster up. And I And I know that it was a few weeks ago, Todd at Baton's, he and I were kind of texting back and forth, and he's like, Tony, we're getting too old for this. I don't know how much more of this I can take. And, you know, we went on as far as to say, well, our dads have been doing it for a long time, yeah. and they're still hanging out with us.
Uh-huh.
And I have to hand it to my pop. He's 77, and he's there every day, and it's been a great ride and experience for me to work alongside him. I can push his buttons. I can get him all wound up, and you know he gets.
Yeah.
He's moody, man. Moody Jack. But yeah, it's our time. And you know, as you said, the gates are wide open. It's time to start planting your tomatoes without any fear of frost or any cold damage. You know, happening or potentially coming about, you know, at this time of year, we should be pretty much in the clear.
Uh-huh.
That's what the Mother's Day mark is all about. Cucumbers. Who doesn't like cucumbers?
Mm. Mm.
You know, you can buy bush cucumbers, pickling cucumbers, you name it. It's there. Who doesn't like, I don't know. I was going to say, who doesn't like the can, but there's a lot of people that don't even know what that is. Right? I know that you do because Lisa does a lot of canning.
Yes.
And it's tomato season, and I love tomatoes. Nothing like a fresh, vine-ripened tomato outside, not inside.
Right.
Not an indoor-grown tomato. Not a hothouse green, you know, grown tomato. It just, there's so much difference.
Sure. Yep.
And now, do you like a meaty tomato, or, you know, a lot of people like the big beef or, you know, beef master or whatever. Do you like that big tomato that's real meaty? I like the pulp. I like the juice.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm late to the party here. I didn't really start enjoying tomatoes until a couple of years ago. And, I guess I do. I like them on that sandwich, love them in salads now and, you know.
Do you still break out when you eat tomatoes?
No.
Has that been the problem?
No, but I did hear, you know, when I was talking with my friends about some of the horseradish issues or questions, and then I also heard them talking about they were trying to find, I guess, the early girl.
Yeah, early girl.
And tell me about that. I wonder why they were looking. What's so different about that?
It's one of the earliest producing tomato plants.
Mm-hmm.
Another good one, too, and we'll talk about early girl, is 4th of July.
Yeah.
So typically, those two tomatoes, you can pretty much factor on getting the first tomato from those particular varieties. And early girl is a very good tomato. A lot of people look for the early girl. On average, it might be 55 days. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to reference that. But it's usually one of the first that you'll get to pick off the vine.
Right.
So that's probably why they're talking about the early girl.
So let me ask you this. Going to put you on the spot here.
Hold on.
If you were going to start with a raised bed, what would you use in the raised bed before you put the plant in?
Well, like soil?
Compost, topsoil, fertilizer?
Fertilume makes a great, great soil called Natural Guard.
Uh-huh.
And it's a garden soil. It has kelp in it, seaweed. It also has earthworm castings in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, even more importantly, it's OMRI certified. And when I say OMRI, that is the Organic Material Review Institute has analyzed that soil and has said that, yes, it is truly organic. It's free of pesticides, herbicides, you name it, insecticides, and it is what it's supposed to be. And a lot of companies, when they go through OMRI certification, they spend a lot of money doing so.
Right.
And, it isn't just done for fun and games or to get that certification. There's a lot of people who are very serious about, you know, organic gardening, and it's here. It's here to stay. You know, it's not a fad. It's not just something that's popular for the moment. The trend is leaning towards organics. It really is, you know, and I see it all the time in the garden center, you know, young mothers with their kids. And that's where it's going, and there's nothing wrong with that. And if we can keep things as clean as possible, I think it overall health-wise, it's a huge benefit for everybody.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we have Bob on the line from New Richmond, wants to ask you about a couple of apple trees, but I also want to hear more about the tomatoes, too. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Bob on the line. Tony's got a question for you about wanting to plant apple trees. Hi, Bob. Thanks for holding on.
Hi. I just got a couple of apple trees. One of them at the bee meeting. But they have like a burlap sack around them. Do I plant them with the sack on it, or do I remove the sack?
Absolutely. You should be able to plant it with the burlap around it. You know, the burlap that's used today in most, did you get it from a nursery or a garden center? I'm sorry, where'd you say you picked up these trees from?
I'm a beekeeper. Anyhow, I want them at the, they raffled them off at the beekeeper's thing.
Okay, as long as it's biodegradable burlap, and that's what it should be. And when you plant those, are they string tied onto the fruit trees?
Possibly. They're wrapped around the base. It has about 1 inch a trunk and 3 gallon pot.
Okay. Yeah, you can leave the burlap on. And what I would do is make sure that around the base of the trunk of the apple trees that there isn't any string. Or if there is, you need to cut it so it doesn't girdle the trunk as it's developing and growing. And I always like to cut a couple slits into the burlap itself. And I plant it and just keep a little bit of that above the soil surface.
All right.
And sometimes what I'll do, I'll cut the burlap around the top and peel it back. Just
keep
so I
can choking the tree.
Yes, absolutely. What varieties did you get?
I think one is a Macintosh and the other one's like a Golden Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both, you know, they should work well with one another. Your Macintosh is usually an early to mid-season bloomer. And the Golden Delicious, it too is a mid to late season bloomer, so you should have really good pollination there.
Well, with about 8 bee boxes in my backyard, I hope so.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. That's great. You know, and, you know, get off to the right start when you plant your fruit trees as prune them each year to get them shaped in such a way where they're better producers for you and they become a stronger tree to hold fruit.
When do you prune them?
You prune them late winter, early spring, like the end of February going into March.
Okay.
And you'll want to prune out anything, especially that's crossing on the inside. You want to open those trees up. And what we're trying to also do when we open the trees up is keep them in such a way where we reduce the issues with diseases that apple trees can get.
Okay.
All right. And, you know, a really good publication that I would encourage you to go online. I don't know if you have access to a computer, but if not, go to the library and try and print this or have somebody that you know that can print it for you. The University of Kentucky puts out a very extensive disease and insect control pamphlet for homegrown fruit, and it's called ID-21. And this particular pamphlet, what I like about it is the most important thing in this is there is a chart in the back of it that tells you when you need to spray based on the growth of the tree at that particular time.
Okay.
And you should do well. Follow up with this. And I'm sorry?
Is that going to tell me what to spray?
And it will tell you what to spray and when to spray. You know, we talk about keeping things organic as best we can, but I will tell you this. When it comes to fruit trees, you know, there's some things that we need to do. It's not the easiest things. They aren't the easiest to grow without intervention from our part. You know, there's some things. And you're going to have to be really careful, too, since you're a beekeeper as well and
yes,
doing what you're doing.
Next question.
Yes.
Is if I had to isolate the bees on the days I took care of this.
Yeah, it's a fine line to walk, and I think that if you get with your extension office, you know, where you are located, or definitely pick up this publication, I think that you will find it very beneficial and helpful in aiding you to do certain things when necessary, or maybe not doing those certain things when necessary because you have the bees.
Okay, ID
ID-21. Yes, sir.
Hi.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Jenny on the line from Bethel who has a question about her rose bush. It appears to be infested.
Ooh.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi. I got some rose. Well, I had 5 rose bushes, but I got 3 more for Mother's Day from my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them has these little teeny tiny bugs on them, and I took a picture of it and then enlarged in it. It looks like a little bitty red spider, but they seem to be going over to my hospice plants now.
Hmm.
What, do you know what they are?
No.
I mean, they're little teeny tiny 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 things. You can just barely see them on the ground on the leaves.
Is there any damage on the leaves by chance?
Yeah, they're being eaten a little bit.
Is it like skeletonized? I would not believe it's that little red spider that you're talking about. The one thing, and you know, a lot of times you'll see those little red spiders. Maybe you might sit on a concrete wall somewhere and look down and you see all these little red spiders. I mean, they're very microscopic looking. They're very minute.
Yeah, that's how this is.
I don't think those guys are your culprit or causing you really any issue. And let's go back to this has been a problem for a lot of people who are, you know, growing rose bushes. What you see when you see the holes in the leaves of the rose bush, it's the rose slug larva that is having its way with it. Do you ever get on Facebook?
Oh, once
chance?
In a while.
Once in a while. I did post a photograph of what the rose slug larva looks like. You really have to inspect the underneath side of the leaf on the rose bush itself. And it's a real little green-like larva. And it's about an eighth of an inch long to a quarter of an inch at max.
And does it eat away at the inside of the leaf more than it is the outer edge?
Yeah, exactly.
That's how this one bush was that my daughter got me.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. You know, and it's really not the demise of a plant. So, you know, it will look unsightly. It'll be somewhat ugly to, you know, gaze at, so to speak. But what you can do, with the exception of if it's a climbing rose bush, I wouldn't encourage you to do this.
No, I don't have.
Is sometimes when we get that kind of activity and you've yet to take the protective measures that's necessary to keep these guys at bay and off of your rose bush, is to go ahead and cut them back a little bit. Cut them back again. All right? And then what I'd like to see you do is visit and get out to one of your local garden centers and nurseries that's a Fertilume dealer. And I want you to pick up the systemic tree and shrub drench.
Okay.
And I want you to mix that up accordingly. And I want you to pour that around the base of your rose bush slowly.
Oh, you don't have to put it on the rose bush itself?
No. Pour it around the very base, right around the trunk, the stem of the rose bush. You pour it slowly, allow it to soak in. It's a systemic product. When we talk about systemic products, what happens with systemic products is it will get into the plant via its root structure, and it gets ingested, and it goes up into the plant and protects it, just like you or I going to get a vaccination for the flu. Okay? It's more effective, though. And but it's that in general. And once you do that, here's the mixture ratio, okay? You're going to mix 3 ounces to a gallon of water per foot height of plant.
All right. Just a second. I'm writing it down. 3 ounces...
to 1 gallon of water.
All right.
Per foot height of plant.
Okay.
Now, when you cut it back, when we do this mixture ratio, what I would like for you to pay attention to is you need to anticipate the growth that rose bush can grow to, the height. And I would at least factor on it getting 3 foot in height. So therefore, what we're going to do, we're not going to just mix 3 ounces. We're going to take it to 9 ounces. We're going to anticipate
some of my mature rose bushes that I've had for a few years. They are probably at least 3 foot and 3 foot tall now.
Right.
And so bushy.
So therefore, you know, you're going to use at least 9 ounces. A little tip, use a bucket, I want you to pour the solution that we're talking about, the Fertilume solution, the tree and shrub systemic insecticidal drench. Pour that first into the bucket, then add the gallon to 2 gallons of water.
Okay.
It mixes better that way. Slowly pour it around your rose bush, and then start fertilizing your rose bush again. They're heavy feeders. Oh. Fertilize them monthly.
Okay. There was one more thing. One of my kids got me, it looks like a tree, but it's roses up on top, you know.
Oh, okay. Tree rose?
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of, does it need special care? I didn't know at first whether I was supposed to plant it in the ground or keep it in the house or what I was supposed to. I've never had one of those before.
Great question. And it's something we forget about sometimes, and that's the tree rose. And the tree rose is a little different type of a species. They're difficult to winter outside, so they're best suited into, you know, being planted in a nice large size container.
Yeah.
They're I'm telling you, though, they're beautiful. They're well worth fussing with sometimes.
Beautiful.
Oh, my God. You know, and it's, but what you will need to do is bring it in during the winter months into a garage. You know, it can be an unheated garage, you know, something that stays in the low 40s, usually. It just, something wherever you pull your car into. And then you'll back off your watering. Now, some people, if they plant it in the ground, what they will do is spade one side of the root structure, lift it up, and they lay it down, and they'll put mulch over it. You can also...
You mean for the winter?
For the winter. So you can also do that as well.
It's easier to bring it in, isn't it?
Does it get
very big? I mean, you know, or do they stay pretty close to... like I said, I've never had one before, and do they get... This one is probably about 4 foot tall, maybe 5 foot tall, 4 foot, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And
unlikely will you see it get taller. You'll see it get broader at the top, at the head, because they're usually grafted onto another rootstock. That's why they don't winter over outside very well. They freeze.
Okay.
If it freezes above that rootstock that it's grafted on, then it's done.
Yeah.
So, therefore, that's why we need to bring it in. That's why we need to protect it in a special way during the winter months. And what you'll do, you'll prune that head back, just like you do your other rose bushes.
Yeah.
And other than that, you stay the same course as we just talked about your other shrub roses, and you're golden.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we've got Judy on the line who's got a Sweet Bay Magnolia question for you. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Judy on the line from Melrose, I think. And she has a Sweet Bay Magnolia and having an issue with it. It's not blooming. Hi, Judy. Thanks for hanging on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I got this Sweet Bay Magnolia 3 years ago. Well, it'll be 3 years in October.
Mm-hmm.
At a nursery, and it has never bloomed. I'm wondering, do I need another one to cross-pollinate?
No, I have one sitting out by itself, and it's... pretty prolific when it blooms. Do you know is it a Jim Wilson variety, or is it a just your standard Sweet Bay?
Do you know
what the variety? Okay, you shouldn't be having any problems. It's a great specimen of a tree. It really is, and I love the blooms. When it blooms, it has more of a citrusy fragrance to it. It's not in bloom yet. So, do you see any buds developing on it by chance?
Well, I had not. However,
yeah,
I can take a look at it.
Oh, cool! You're right by it. All right.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, you should. You know, you should maybe see some bud development starting on it at any given point.
And I think I see one.
Okay, and how tall is it? How large is it?
It's about 7 feet now.
Yeah, you should start seeing some bud development and blooms on it for sure. There's no doubt about it. I remembered, and I don't know if this has any bearing whatsoever. I remembered planting mine. It's been years ago, And, you know, I remember I didn't see as many blooms on it when it was younger as I do as it is right now being older. But unless you're pruning it, too, it's bloom, you know, there's buds set up, too, from the prior season. So you're not losing, you're not pruning those out, are you?
No, after I planted it, I've just left it alone. It's just grown.
Well, let it go. The only other thing I would encourage you to do is maybe fertilize it. Mm-hmm. You know, I would probably, I would probably use one of the Espoma products, like Tree Tone or Plant Tone, something to, fertilize it and see what happens, or something a little higher and with a middle number.
Uh-huh.
And see if we can get a little bit more bloom production with it. But you should be seeing some blooms. You really should. Okay. If it's been there for 3 or 4 years, yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, keep us in the loop. Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
749 B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We have Dan from Delhi, who has the leaves of his tulip tree are dying, I guess, towards the end of the branch. Got some issues. Hi, Dan. Thanks for hanging on. How old's your tree?
I think it's about 5 years old now. It's probably about 20, 30 feet tall. I mean, very, very lush.
Okay.
But just the end of, I'd say, almost 50% of the leaves are dying. I can reach up, punch them, and they're gone.
Nothing's flagging on it when I say that. Are the tips of the branches, are they, like, bent over and just hanging with the brown tips, or are they still upright?
They're still upright.
That's interesting. I'm not really sure. I'd have to look into it a little bit more, and maybe we can get a hold of Tim back or one of the other arborists here locally. I don't know if it might be some sort of an insect issue or a tip blight type of issue.
Dan,
of some
can
sort.
You can you just snap a couple of pictures and send them to us on our Facebook page?
Yeah, sure. I'd be very happy to do that when I get home today. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know if it had something to do with the way the weather flip-flop this spring.
More than likely, yeah. I would have to say that definitely what we're seeing with that it is environmental. And my next thing is I'm trying to determine if, in fact, you know, what type of diseases that they'll get. And it sounds like it's some sort of a tip blight type of disease. And what I'll do, I'll try and see what I can find out for you. And maybe we can get a hold of Tim back or somebody.
Or even David Kester out at the extension office.
Yeah, I doubt if he's up early on a Saturday. Those guys are closed on the
weekend.
They're closed on the weekend.
Well, do us a favor once you post that, and then send us a private message so that we can, better yet, let's do this. Hang on the line once we
I'll get back in touch with you.
And we'll get your contact information, and then we'll reach right back out to you when we have the info.
Super. Thank you very much. We'll hold on. Thank you.
Okay, hang on. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to still talk about that little red fruit. Didn't get into that tomato discussion too deeply.
Tomato.
That's right. You got it.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, boy, you sure have opened up a can of interest with the magnolia tree, or sometimes referred to as a tulip tree. Is that right?
No, not necessarily. Just magnolia. It's southern magnolia. Yeah, you know, some people, yeah, it's got that, some of them got
so
the tulip.
So there are two kinda, different trees?
Well, yeah, the tulip poplar is the one that the one gentleman, Dan, had called about.
Okay. Well, we have Amber on the line from Blue Ash, who has a magnolia tree question. Hi, Amber. Thanks for holding on.
Thank you. I am having an issue. My magnolia is developing blooms, unlike the previous caller.
Mm-hmm.
But mine is not a sweet bay. It's a different kind. It is actually a more water hardy because we have kind of a wet feet area in our yard. And mine is approximately, I would say, almost 20 to 22 foot tall.
Awesome.
But my issue is I am losing a lot of leaves this year for some reason, and I don't know. I know it normally loses some because my variety holds its leaves through the winter,
mm-hmm.
and then it does usually shed some. But
right.
I mean, I have new ones coming on and blooms. I don't know if I'm just worrying about nothing, if it's just because it's getting bigger, so it's more leaves that I seem to be losing, or if it's, you know, if there's something else more going on. Because I have a Canadian cherry tree in the front that I have these black pods all over the tips of it and on the branches, and it is causing all of the leaves to die off of my tree in the front of my yard.
Ooh, that's not good. Let's start with the magnolia. So okay. I'm taking, you have one of those, like you see that shiny green leaf, the thick leaf type of magnolia, right, that we're accustomed to seeing during the holiday seasons, and we decorate with that type of foliage. I have noticed the same thing that you're speaking of, and a lot of it has to do with what we're experiencing with weather. You know, a lot of the moisture, a lot of weird things. You know, just the other day, I already noticed some tip blight in some of the apple trees. And this stuff is kind of common, you know, when you go through damp periods and it's just not a good thing, or cooler temperatures. And that's when these diseases start affecting some of our trees. In your particular case with your magnolia, being the fact that it's older, that it's established, and you're seeing new growth coming on, and it's doing just what it's supposed to do. Those leaves that become affected, you know, with fungal issues and so forth, you get that discoloration, that gold in it, that brown look. You're familiar
with what it's doing.
Right. Yeah. They're going to drop, and it's going to replace that. And I wouldn't be too alarmed. You said something a moment ago that it kind of, you've noticed that it has tolerated some moisture in recent years or over its lifetime where it's been. They don't really want to sit in water, and that's where some of that comes from, too. So for the most part, I would allow it to go. I wouldn't do anything heroic. And it's just one of those things, you know, we just need to get into a period where we don't have a lot of moisture at one given time, or have issues with cool temperatures, or even worse, sometimes we go from being damp and wet, or, you know, being damp and cool, to also being damp and hot and humid. So, you know, you get those fluctuations, and that's what you're experiencing. And for the most part, I think you're good. Now let's go back to the cherry tree.
Yes, my Canadian cherry tree, it is in my front yard. It loved the area we put it in. It grew leaps and bounds. It is about 30 foot tall and probably about a 15 foot or more diameter. So it's about at its, you know, peak of what it's supposed to be.
Right.
And we started noticing, not this past year, but the year before, some black kind of, they almost look foamy-like pods on some of the branches.
Right.
And I cut off the ones that I saw, but it's like every year they keep coming back, and they're more and more. And then the branches that they are coming on are turning brown. All of the leaves are falling off. And, I mean, there's nothing I can do. I mean, I used to not be able to see through the tree. Now I can't. I can see through the tree, you know, as far as, you know, where the leaves have fallen off. It used to produce the little cherries. Very few of those are, you know, coming on anymore. And I don't know if it's too late, if we've just kind of lost the tree and we have to just kind of chalk it up. Like that. I have noticed that there are other trees similar to it in the neighborhood, and they all have this.
You know, what you're seeing is what we call a black knot fungus.
Okay.
It's like a fungal disease that really it gets into prunus, our cherry trees. And a lot of times it can really run rampant. It really depends on how serious that it is. And you may want to just have an arborist take care of it, or take a look at it to see where it is in its given stage. And if there's any remedy that could be taken to kind of curb the issue.
Okay.
There are some fungicides that can be used that need to be sprayed early in the season. And those are like chlorothalonil, Captan, things like that, that help, you know, keep some of these disease issues at bay.
Okay.
But once you start seeing that black knot, you know, it's even like, it's like it's on the main trunk, too, or it's on the branching. As you see it throughout the tree.
It is not on the main trunk, and it is not on the, like, the secondary branches, the thicker ones. It is still, like, on what I would call, like, the tertiary branches, the ones that, you know, break that go into the littler branches that are like okay. the size of a pinky nail or smaller.
Gotcha. Okay, so out on the tips, mostly yes. the younger growth or the last couple of years' growth.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, that's even better that it's not down into the older part of the tree, because it can also, you will also sometimes see it on the trunks as well.
Okay.
You have a pencil handy?
I actually do not, but if you could maybe put it on your Facebook page or whatever.
I will do that.
I can actually get the number off of, or any information yeah. that you okay. you can give me.
Yeah, I will put like three or four different certified arborists, you know, that you want to get in touch with. And I think that's what you're seeing is the black knot disease. And if you okay. can keep it at bay, you know, a lot of that, too, you know, it's brought on by a number of different factors that are, you know, environmental. So okay. We'll see where
now,
that goes.
If I treat mine and the neighbors don't treat theirs, is it likely to come back?
It could if it's, you know, it gets spread, you know, it's spread by spores, you know, wind blown.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So if you're seeing it in others,
yes,
it could
it's
be
all around the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So well, I'm wondering if we're all just going to end up losing our trees.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, it's the cherries, it's the plums, you know, they're all related. And those are the ones that are affected most by the black knot disease. You know, it's all fungal. And what I'll do, I'll post that on the Facebook page. And, you know, follow up with me. We'd like to hear, you know, what the diagnosis is and
okay.
Perhaps what the remedy's going to be. And okay. we'll just see if we can perhaps save this cherry tree and move forward.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We love the tree, and we would really like to keep it. So
it's a beautiful tree. I had one years ago that I did lose to borers, unfortunately.
But,
it's a
wow.
great, it's a beautiful specimen, nonetheless. And we'll see what we can do for it.
Wonderful. Thank you guys so much for your help. Have
You're
a
welcome.
Wonderful day.
Bye.
You too. Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, again, jump onto our Facebook page. We did have a question on our Facebook page, Tony, to repeat the website for registering a tree. We had one of our listeners just get inside when we were talking about that and mm-hmm. missed the website.
It's takingroot.org, but we'll get that out there and info. Thank you. I always say org, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Johnny. That's why you keep us on our toes. I like it. It's takingroot.info.
Okay.
That's where you go to register your tree, and we will also post that out there on our Facebook page.
That is Sharon Whitaker had posed that question. We're going to respond back to her, and we'll also put up the information that was just requested from the lister we were just talking to, and a lot of magnolia questions today.
And
I agree. That's my favorite tree.
This is one of those situations that we're finding ourselves right in the midst of, and it's all disease related
mm-hmm.
and it's weather related. And this is why it's so important to keep your, you know, to prune for a purpose, keep things opened up, put them in areas that's not too overly crowded. You get really good air movement and circulation around our plants. That's of the essence. And when they sit and they're kind of wet and they're wet for a period of time, Ernie, it just sets the stage up that, you know, welcomes all these disease issues.
Mm-hmm. Once the door's open,
it's open.
You know, they'll come in, and so we're all their other disease friends.
Yeah, no. And I'm always looking at things in the nursery. I'm pruning some things and you know, just trying to keep things in check. I did notice some apple trees with a little bit of blight.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, it's a hard one to fight.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we'll talk about the tomatoes.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the tomatoes.
Or tomatoes. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have been talking an awful lot about trees, but we wanted to get the discussion started about tomatoes, all tomatoes.
What's that season, you know?
Yes.
And ironically, we just, as we stepped out to take a little break, we had a caller that was asking, they were looking for some of the black cherry tomatoes. I know that we're out because we only grow a few and start a few, just for those who like to get off the beaten path and try something different and unique. But the black cherry tomatoes are awesome. And one that I would encourage you to look for if you have yet to have a black cherry tomato, or you want to experience the unique look of the black cherry tomatoes and so forth,
mm-hmm.
is the Indigo Rose. It's really a cool one. And, you know, there's also the indigo apple. So these are small little black cherry tomatoes that they'll quench your little tomato buds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're good. They're good. The sun sugars are really good, too. I love sun sugars. So if you have little ones, you know, that around the house, you have to grow the little cherry tomatoes or the great bed tomatoes. They like to just pick those, you know. And they're not, it's not the big tomato that they might waste, a little one, you know. They can just eat those cherry tomatoes rather easily and, hey, or a handful.
Yeah.
You just get hundreds on a vine. You get hundreds on a vine.
I could never tell if the plant was doing well or not. Lisa used to grow them out on the porch. I never did see many of them come to the fruit, so to speak. That's because she walked out, and when they're ripe, picks them right mm-hmm. off the vine, and eats them standing right there.
But these are the type of tomatoes. This is why early in the season, when we talk about, and I'm going way back to like January and February, when we talk about starting to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and look for various unique varieties of seed. That's the advantage of that, you know, because you don't always find everything that's different and unique in plant form when you go shopping at your local home, you know, your garden centers and nurseries. Unfortunately, there's so many different types of tomatoes, we cannot carry every one of those.
Yeah.
We do our best to come up with some different varieties. But, you know, and there's those people that, like I said, they won't get off the beaten path. They just, all at once, big boy, better boy, Jetstar. Okay. Here they are.
Yeah.
It's all good. They're great tomatoes. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Bar Globe, you know. But there's so many different varieties out there. Right. There really, really are. Black Crème is one that I think that really kind of came on years ago. It was one of the first of the black tomatoes that you see. Cherokee Purple, Black from Tula. There's all types of black, you know, tomatoes. And really what they are, they're red on the bottom and still kind of greenish on the top, so they'll take on a black hue.
Right.
And they're ripe.
You remember we got a phone call from Vicky to us the other week, and I think she was telling me that she has over 100 different varieties.
Oh, she may be sitting on some of those varieties as well. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Vicky's one of the few people, and I'm sure there's a lot of others, but not many will venture out and grow different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun experimenting with some of the old heirloom varieties or some of the newer varieties. They all taste differently. I can't tell you or give you any insight or information on what is less acidic versus another type of tomato. A lot of people think that the yellows are less acidic when, in fact, I've heard that in some cases they could be more acidic. You know, it varies. There are so many different types of tomatoes. And Vicky would have last year for the very first time, she had her tomato festival. And it was incredible. I mean, there were two tables full of different varieties of tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're beautiful. They're beautiful just in a tomato salad, a little olive oil, maybe some fresh basil or, you know, parsley or whatever you want to put on there. It just makes that flavor more intense and enhances it, and it's so good. Fresh garlic, you know, in that tomato salad. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just salivating right now thinking about it. Who doesn't like
You'll be running over to Findlay Market as soon as we get off.
I can't. I still have plant material to put away. If I went over to Findlay Market this morning, which I need to, my dad would probably have a calf.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. We have things to still get to be put away.
Sure.
We got busy yesterday with deliveries and stuff still needs to be placed and put away. But I love tomatoes, Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother topic in itself. And here's something else that's really interesting about tomatoes. There are really two types. There are those that we call determinate tomatoes, and there are those that we call indeterminate tomatoes. And when we talk about determinate tomatoes, we're talking about the bush varieties, those that will typically grow to a specified height, you know, to whereas, you know, and they produce a lot at one given time. So those are typically your bush tomatoes, your patio tomatoes. You may see them as being termed as or called. So those are determinate types of tomatoes. And the indeterminate types are those that can get 5 feet. Some might get 6 feet. Some might get, you know, whatever they can grow to, as long as you're able to keep them staked. And that's really important, too, keeping your tomatoes upright, staked well. You'll get better production. You know, they're not lying on the ground. And sometimes when they lie on the ground, that's okay. They'll produce fruit. But sometimes the fruit that's on the ground will rot, and therefore you don't get to pick or harvest it because it's useless.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, keeping them staked, keeping them caged is so important. It makes for better, like, gardening practices, you know, cultivating that tomato plant to get it to do its best and give you the best production is staking them.
Mm-hmm.
And also fertilization is also important as well. I really like to use Tomato Tone. It's a product from Espoma that it has a fair amount of calcium in it when the fruit's developing. So that's a great product too. And, you know, just practice good watering habits. You were talking a little while ago about mowing. You know, you heard a lot of lawnmowers and stuff going throughout the neighborhood last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those grass clippings make nice, you know, a nice type of mulch for your garden beds, your tomatoes. It helps keep weeds at bay. Mm-hmm. It also keeps the soil temperature cooler. So there are some things that you can do with those grass clippings if you're catching them with a bagger on your mower. So just keep that in mind. Also, you know, fertilizing those tomato plants with a good fertilizer is of the essence. Do not use, there's a product that's in a green box. It's got a lot of nitrogen in it. And I hear these old timers come in all the time and tell me, my plants are almost 10 foot tall. They're reaching the garage roof. Really? you know what I want to know? How much fruit are you getting to pick?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about. It's about production. You know, you could be a company that makes all this money or has all these sales, but it's all about how much you get to keep at the end of the season. It's about production. So growing tomatoes, it's not difficult. You don't want to plant them in the same area every year. That's so important, too, because all of a sudden you start setting yourself up for diseases. But nothing beats a good old BLT, and you don't even like the mayo on it, do you?
No. No,
I'm throwing you out the door, because that was my next question. Is it Miracle Whip or is it real mayo? What's your preference?
I don't know. It's bacon, lettuce, and tomato.
But you know what?
Sandwich.
It's a sandwich. But you know, just if you like bacon, over at Eckerline's at Finley Market, the Applewood smoked bacon is like to die for. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be so good on that sandwich. I can't tell you how good that would be.
Well, I've got to get Lisa down there. She has yet to make it to Finley Market with us, and we'll make that a plan.
We need to make that happen. You know, my dad likes to, I'll pick up some bacon for my dad from Eckerline's, and he'll come in, you know, maybe one morning and say, oh, I had that bacon. That bacon's so good.
Did you bring any in?
And I always remember when I was a kid, he would cook bacon. He would have his boxer shorts on without a shirt, and that grease would pop back on him, you know. And he'll, you ever have that pop on you? Well, you know, that's what that little screen's for.
Yeah.
You put that little screen over that.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
I don't know. Let's wrap up the tail end of this last half hour of the show talking about our plan of the week. And if you're just joining us, welcome. And you're going to definitely want to hear about this one.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our plant of the week is on our In and Around the House Facebook page. But tell us a little bit about this. It's a beautiful plant.
That it is. And that's the Acer Grisium. That is the paper bark maple. You can't go wrong with this. If you have some limited spaces in and around the landscape or around the home, this might be one that you may want to consider or select. It, on average, will get around 20, 25 feet in height, about a 15 to a 25-foot spread. And again, those are just averages. You know, when we talk about these average spreads and heights, that is a tree or a shrub that has lived a long time, and over its given time or lifetime, it's averaged out to be that height. Nothing quits growing until the day it doesn't exist anymore. So keep that in mind for the plant world. It's always growing. If it's there, it's always going to grow. One of the noteworthy characteristics about this particular species, the paper bark maple, is that it has that exfoliating bark. You know, it's just, it's so gorgeous to look at. It creates winter interest in the garden, and it just peels back and it hangs out on the trunk of the tree, and it's beautiful to look at. It has that cinnamon kind of brownish hue or reddish hue to it.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very attractive. And it's just a great species. It truly is. It's one that's well worth having in the landscape.
And the most important thing about when you decide to put it in the ground, make sure it's not too close.
Exactly. You know, if it gets on the average 20, 25 feet in width, you know, from the center of the trunk, go out half that distance. So at least go out 12 feet, 12 and a half feet. Leave it, you know, allow it to grow in its space. Give it some room. That's so important. I can't say that enough. Also, some other notable exfoliating kind of trees, you know, when it comes to bark and so forth, that's worth considering too, is the lacebark elm, a beautiful specimen of a tree. And it too has this graceful appearance to it, this upright spreading habit, and the bark on it is really, really interesting. Also, the dawn redwood, we were talking about that. And even the bald cypress, you know, it gets quite large as well. It's deciduous. I love the bark on it. Has that cinnamon reddish color look to it, like a flake.
Mm-hmm.
But very interesting, to say the least. And also, you know, we're all familiar with the river birch. It gives you that interesting bark appearance and exfoliation. So there's a number of trees out there that bring interest into the landscape that, you know, like I said, highlighting these attributes with landscape lighting at night is so cool. It really, really is. Mm-hmm. I just love it. And if you plant a tree, go out to takingroot.info and register that tree. We were talking about that earlier. I always want to say org. I apologize for that. That just always rolls off my tongue, and that was incorrect of me to say. But it's takingroot.info.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you take the time to jump onto our Facebook page, look us up, and like us. And you noticed that the one gentleman we were talking about posted the pictures of his amaryllis.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Really nice.
There's over 20 or so blooms on it. And also, too, Sharon Whitaker, she shared something with us. We were talking to the one gentleman, Dan, about the tulip poplar tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to ask him if some of those branches were flagging. But she also brought up, too, the petiole borer, which I know has been active. And usually you'll have petiole borer issues with a lot of maple trees. This is a little insect that likes to saw around the tip of the branches of our trees.
Yeah.
Or drop leaves. So sometimes that could be a problem too, and thanks for sharing. That's what this program's all about. All of us who like gardening, we learn something every day. I was kind of curious if that could be it or if it's a type of disease too. Mm-hmm. You never know until you really inspect or see a tree or you see these bits and pieces of plants lying on the ground.
And tell us a little bit about the youngest gardener that you have posted.
Yeah,
what a beautiful picture.
Yeah, it was just last week that she's adorable, by the way. We had our youngest shopping gardener at Jackson Florist, bar none. She stopped by and she had her little shopping cart with her. And in her shopping cart was her baby doll that was in... And this isn't a Jackson Florist shopping cart. She had her own.
Right.
And she had her baby doll, and it was sitting up in the basket with Fertilum soil, the ultimate potting mix. And on the bottom of the shopping cart, she also had her tomato plants.
You came across her and then asked her to turn around so you
and
could
come
get
back
a photo.
And come back down the aisle, absolutely, because it was a Kodak moment.
Mm-hmm.
You could not deny not having to be able to take a picture of that. It was so cute. It was just so adorable. It really was.
Mm-hmm. So make sure you take the time to jump on to our Facebook page and check out that's worth the visit. And then you can always stay connected with us. It's a great way to post pictures and pose questions, and we'll respond to you in kind. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause when we come back.
We can wrap it up, too, with maybe what's still bugging you in the landscape. We were talking about that earlier. One of our favorite shade plants might be having an issue with something that you want to pick up on when we come back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking a lot about different plants and trees and also about tomatoes because it is that season. And Tony, we have Steve on the line from Alexandria. Got a question for you about advice for growing those upside down tomatoes. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Have you tried that before?
No. I sort of did last year, but I realized I didn't know what I was doing. So what I did was I just took the plant and went in and put it in the ground. But obviously, I guess you don't use dirt, or you wouldn't use much dirt, because the bucket would weigh 200 pounds, as I discovered last year.
Right.
So my question was, I want to try it this year. I have several varieties out in my regular garden, but I wondered if there's any particular varieties that respond or grow better in that way, you know, with the upside down, if that matters, or... Basically, what's the best way to do it? I'm going to jump off here and let you guys answer, but thank you.
All right, thank you.
Years ago, what we're talking about here is the topsy-turvy tomato plant, kind of a planter that you could purchase at your local garden center and nurseries.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big fad, and you can successfully grow tomatoes that way. Mm-hmm. I would probably be more inclined to do a cherry tomato that way. The bag, obviously, it was smaller than a 5-gallon bucket or a 3-gallon bucket, and certainly a lot less weight. And that's when you want to use some of your soilless mixes, because they're lighter in weight. So therefore, I don't know how he would hang a bucket upside down, which I'm sure you could, but from something, it would have to be very sturdy.
Right.
It'd be a lot of weight, just like you said. And use some of your soilless mixes. Make sure you get really good drainage. And then, you know, fertilize when necessary. It can be done. It's more of a novelty kind of thing. Kids might like it or so forth. Or somebody see it for the very first time. Like, that's cool. But really, I don't think there's an advantage to that or disadvantage. Maybe if you live in an apartment complex and you have balconies only,
mm-hmm.
you could grow some tomato plants that way, or in a small container.
Yeah,
on
that
the balcony.
Was going to be my initial question, but he answered that for me, because I thought maybe there might be a space constraint that he wanted to do that. And then he went on to say that he had a regular garden. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's trying to get some close.
No, and actually that's the novelty of that whole approach. There were... you would see them on TV all the time advertising the topsy-turvy tomato, like hanging baskets. And it was quite light, too, because it was like when you would buy a tarp or something, and it's got that material.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? It's real light, kind of collapses. You could fill it up, and it'll hold the soil. Then it had a plug in the bottom that you could plug your tomato plant in. You were kind of limited with the size of that plug, too, so it had to be relatively small to begin with.
Right.
But, you know, people have done it successfully. I think, the fad's over, so to speak. As a matter of fact, somebody was asking for one the other day. Somebody called in and wanted to know if we had those topsy-turvies, and I haven't seen them in a couple years.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you get connected with us on our Facebook page, and you can post pictures, post questions, and we can answer them as quickly
as we can. Do our best. You know, it's one of those things. It's not always easy to diagnose what's going on, when you're listening to someone or describing it, you know, over the phone or over the air. But something I want to touch base on before we went into the break and before we conclude our show this morning is, what's bothering you in the shade garden, your hostas, is probably the little old pesky slug, the snail.
So let me ask you about that. When you treat that, this is not a way to treat it by sprinkling something on over top of the plant, right? There's a specific way to...
Right. It's more of a granular type of product.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us who are Fertilume dealers, we sell this product in our garden center. It's from High Yield, which is a Fertilume company. And it's called Slug and Snail Bait. And it comes in a bag. It's granular. Real easy to apply. Just have somebody take a broomstick handle and just go underneath your hosta leaves, gently push upward ever so slightly,
mm-hmm.
to where it just makes it easier to spread it underneath the hosta.
Okay.
A lot of hostas, you know, some get really, you know, wide and big, and some are more upright and narrow. It just varies, but that makes applying it a lot easier.
And so you have to go all the way around the plant.
Yes, and it's very, very effective. And what's happening is these little slugs and snails, they love moisture. And when there's moisture, they can kind of glide and slide around, you know, on the soil surface a lot easier.
Do you think a lot of the issues people are seeing now is the because of all the rainfall mm-hmm. that we've had?
Absolutely.
That sort of prompted it.
And the damage that you typically see on your hostas, it won't go away, but it looks as if somebody just went down into the backyard like Ernie Clampett. Yeah. Yeah. Or Jethro Clampett and just took a shotgun and blew holes in your leaves of the hostas. They don't get any better throughout the season. You have to wait till next season. So why not keep them looking dapper, looking really good, and just use this product?
So once the once that starts on the leaves and mm-hmm. you put this down, do you prune the affected leaves off?
If it's really tattered and looking bad, I would prune it out, mm-hmm. cut out that leaf, that stem down to the main stalk of the, you know, the hosta itself.
Okay. Mm-hmm,
absolutely. But once it's there, it never gets better. But to prevent it, these products really, really work. The party is underneath the leaf.
Right.
That's where it's happening. These guys hang out. They all meet at the base of the hosta plant and say, all right, let's take it up a notch. Then they go up to the underneath leaf side of the hosta plant, and they can do some damage quick.
Yeah.
And you're like, during the daytime, you're looking at it, like, where are these guys? They come out after dusk.
Mm-hmm.
They're like Ernie.
Yeah.
They're nocturnal, man. They hang out at night.
They
cause you problems at night. But a real simple fix, high-yield slug and bait product. It will keep your hostas looking nice. And one last little tip about this. You do have an option. If you have concerns, if you have pets, there's a pet-safe snail and slug bait from Bonide. One of the two, it's your choice. They both work really, really well. You will pay a little bit more for the one that's pet safe, but your pets, you know, they're family members. We want to keep those guys safe, you know. But if you don't have pets, go for the high yield product, and you'll have some beautiful hostas.
Thank you so much, Tony. Just one more quick question.
No, you're done. You're out of questions.
Is moving a hosta? We're going to relocate the grill at the house. Is it okay to do it now? Just yes or no.
And the need of that grill to be relocated and that program that you have going on at your home in Villa Hills, yes.
Okay.
Go ahead and move it. It's not when I would call the ideal time. Just get as much as that plant up, lift it as best you can, and then relocate it.
Great. Hey, we do want to invite you to stop out to the world's largest garage sale. B105's world's largest garage sale is going to be happening Sunday, June the 4th from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Turfway Park in Florence. You can purchase your spot now by going to B105.com. Special thanks to Ohio Mulch and the LKQ Pick Your Parts people. And we'll hopefully see you there. Have yourself a great weekend. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys.